Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thank you very much, as always, for being here. Hope everything is good with you and yours, wherever you are in the world. It's Friday mid-morning as I'm recording this. I'm going to get pretty much straight into things because we played last night. Obviously, that plays havoc, of course, with the podcast schedule. That's why I'm so desperate for us to get back into the Champions League, because we play Tuesday and Wednesday, and then I can do a good recording on a Thursday, have the podcast for you on a Friday morning. But when we play sort of late on a Thursday night, it's very difficult to do that. However, we do have a show, we have a good conversation about the game and everything else, and it is, of course, a big weekend, this October slogathon, whatever you want to call it, 9 games in 30 days continues, no rest for the wicked and all that. Liverpool coming up on Sunday, which is an exciting and also still slightly terrifying prospect given the way things have gone against them, and we'll talk a little bit about that before the end of this show. Just to tell you as well that I do have a little bit of a competition for you a bit later on in the show. It comes from our friends at Club Golf, who've got an Arsenal 92 polo shirt to give away, which will look great on the golf course if you're a golfer, and even if you're not, it's still a very snazzy piece of clothing that you can wear wherever you like, because, you know, who's going to stop you going around in the bruised banana? Listen out for details after we have the conversation in the podcast, and I'm delighted to welcome back to the show from CBS Sports, James Benge. Hello, James.
Hi, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm all right. Thank you very much. Nice to have some European football back at the Emirates. Feels like it's been gone a while. And, you know, just the sort of occasion, the lights, the 5,000 Norwegians jumping up and down in the corner. We've missed that.
I've missed that an awful lot. I think it felt like a sort of return to the good old days, or very much not the good old days, actually, of sort of vast indifference from a home fan base that kind of turned up about 10 minutes late, left 10 minutes early. And, you know, it's not up to me to tell them whether that's the right or wrong thing to do. You know, I'm not paying for a ticket. And that was sort of set against, though, these visiting fans who, and I think it's always quite a nice moment for those of us in the Arsenal world, you know, this was one of the biggest games in their recent history, and a moment to really celebrate, a chance to go to London. There were loads of them. They made magnificent noise. It was very Europa League, I thought, right the way down to the Bodo Glimt bus, Bodo Glimt coach breaking down, the first team squad piling into minivans without enough room for the coaches, who were then encouraged to walk to the Emirates. I'm like, look, Chelsea, AC Milan, you don't get it in that. Man City against Atletico Madrid, that doesn't happen. But in the Europa League, we do things a little bit differently, and I like it for that.
We've got to sort out whoever's in charge of the coach hire for Bodo Glimt. Their coach, if you like, is probably going to be in some trouble.
If this happens to Arsenal next week, you know, this is a trudge through the Arctic Circle snows. It could be quite a crisis for Arsenal.
Well, yeah, slightly different circumstances up there next week, not least of which, of course, is the pitch that we're going to have to contend with. But that's in the future. So let's talk about the past, the not too distant past. And it was a 3-0 win for Arsenal. Like you say, I think it was very Europa League. It felt very Thursday night. If you talk about the good old days, this is sort of like the old days on the way, hopefully, to get back to the good old days when you're playing Champions League football. I think there's an interesting discussion to be had about that in the context of using some of the players that were used last night. We'll get to that. But Mikel Arteta made 8 changes from the team that, as we now know, were quite lucky to beat Tottenham at the weekend. but there were 3 first-team players. First-team, I say that in inverted commas. Gabriel started, as he has every game this season. If people want to talk about other players in the Premier League being a machine or a monster or a cyborg or whatever it is, Gabriel's up there in terms of, at least, of his durability. Granit Xhaka started, as he normally does, in midfield, and Gabriel Martinelli on the left-hand side, with some pre-planned changes. I mean, without going too deep into the weeds here, when you're looking at that in the Europa League group stages and you're seeing, look, there are three players who were playing that we probably would prefer not to, is that sort of an indication that squad depth is still a slight issue for Arsenal at this point of the season?
Well, I mean, in two of those three positions as well, we know these are the areas where Arsenal felt they were one short. So one more central midfielder and one more wide attacking option. So, I mean, yes, certainly you're right that it is... It would be nice to have the option. And I didn't really get a sense there was. Obviously, Reece Nelson came back and got a few minutes, and that was great. But I didn't really, you know, there wasn't really a huge sense that there was enough in that squad that they could do without playing some senior players. I mean, on the broader point, though, I tend to think, certainly at the moment, there is a logic to going quite strong, getting these games won. I mean, obviously, as Arsenal weren't in the Europa League last season, maybe it's news to some fans. Obviously, it won't be to Mikel Arteta. But winning this group does save you another round of fixtures, and tricky fixtures as well. The what they now call the preliminary knockout round or something like that, where the teams that finished second in the Europa League groups would drop down, would play the Champions League teams that drop down.
I didn't know that was a thing.
A really fiddly task. And you've got teams in there that could well be Barcelona or Inter Milan. I mean, for all we know, Tottenham, Ajax, there are going to be good teams that drop down. And if you can kind of miss them and give yourself two games off early in the new year, there's real value. So I have to say, I almost was of the view of, and certainly this will be relevant come the PSV games, go a bit stronger now. I know it's tough. I know that you're going to be asking an awful lot of your star players. But get that, you know, get those games won quickly. Mm. It's always, you know, you see this as well in the Champions League with your Cities and your Real Madrids. You know, they're going to go full strength, get 12 points, get top of the table. Once you do that, you play whoever you want. You know, bring out the under 18s for all I care. But I think there is a real advantage to getting top of the group. Obviously, you don't want to damage your Premier League campaign in the process. But I thought that was about right. To play some senior players.
I did not realise that was a thing in this. Was that introduced last year in the Europa League?
Yeah, it was introduced last year. And actually, you could see that like a team like West Ham, like Barcelona, who had dropped down, by the end of by the time they were getting to the quarterfinals, they looked knackered. Mm. And I mean, West Ham looked knackered a bit later on, but it certainly helped them a little bit having that extra two games off.
On the broader point, though, because seeing as we're talking about it, might as well talk about it now before we go into some of the specifics of the game itself. Like, I was watching the game, I was sort of keeping a half an eye on social media while I'm doing the live blog and stuff, and there was a lot of low-level angst, I think is what you would say, about some of the players who were, starting, like Martinelli starting, Xhaka starting, Gabriel starting, and then introducing Bukayo Saka, Gabriel Jesus. People are going, why are you playing Gabriel Jesus in a game like this? He could get injured. Why are you bringing on Ben White in a game like this? He could get injured. It was Saka, Odegaard, and Jesus were the first three substitutes. And, like, I get it from an anxiety point of view. Like, as Arsenal fans, I think we have some deep scars about players maybe picking up an injury in a game that perhaps they didn't need to play in. And I think you've got to also acknowledge that Thomas Partey didn't come on, a guy who's pretty much an injury risk. Alexander Zinchenko was not in the squad. Kieran Tierney, he came off. So, like, the guys who are perhaps the most brittle weren't put in a position where they could do themselves some damage. So, Tierney came off. The other two didn't get involved. But I do think that there is, like, the way fans think about this issue is completely and utterly different from the way managers and coaches think about it and the way that players think about it as well. Like, I don't think they're... Like, they can't go into any game with the mindset of, well, what if this guy gets injured if we play him for a few minutes? Because you could get injured in training. Players want to play, whether it's Europa League, whether it's Premier League, whatever. They want to play. So I think there is something disconnected between the way fans think and the way the managers and players think. And after a couple of weeks off in September when nobody played, where the kind of minutes that you would like to accumulate by this point of the season that perhaps mean you've got to give players a rest because they're fatigued, haven't happened. So it is slightly different. Like, I understand the worry. If Gabriel Jesus goes on and gets a kick and misses Liverpool on Sunday, I get it. But I don't think that they take that into as much consideration as fans do.
Yeah, when I sort of saw those replies, and you see them every time Arsenal are in the Europa League, my mind kind of goes to, do you remember Santiago Cañizares? It was before an international tournament, and he dropped a bottle of aftershave on his foot and missed the World Cup or the Euros or whatever it was. And, I do think some fans wouldn't be entirely happy unless Gabriel Jesus was literally wrapped in bubble wrap and was rolled from Colney to the Emirates Stadium. Like you say, these are footballers. Get them to play some football. It's not the worst idea, especially for a home match. Especially, like you say, Jesus, Martinelli, Gabriel, they all didn't go away over the international break. It is, going back to that point we're making, when Jesus, Saka and Ødegaard came on, there was half a chance that, and it was the only kind of chance in the game that Bodo Glimt might make this a little bit difficult. Mm. In the end, adding those three players cooled the pressure a little bit, gave Arsenal a bit more in the final third, even though it took a while for the goals to come. And actually, that probably meant that you were putting a little less physical strain on Gabriel, on Granit Xhaka, on even on the players that you're going to need to come off the bench and be in the squad on Sunday. I think, if it's a case of, and this is maybe this group off the top of my head doesn't quite have these demands, but when it's a case of flying Gabriel, your star players to the other end of Europe to possibly come off the bench, I think that's a wasted endeavour, no matter kind of how fit they are. And of course, we should remember in all this that, Gary O'Driscoll and his medical team are giving Mikel Arteta insights we can't even imagine. They know whether it's a risk or not. Mm. I don't fly them to the other end of Europe because you might need to bring them off the bench. But, they can pop to Colney and play half an hour. And if they get injured, they could get injured doing anything else in the world. It's at some stage, like you say, Andrew, you do have to be willing to play your footballers in football matches.
Well, that's it. And I know this is a big if, but we could be sitting here having this conversation this time next year after a Tuesday game, a Wednesday game, hopefully in the Champions League. And then you have to stop thinking about this kind of two-team system that you have, particularly with the group stages of the Europa League, where you go, right, everyone who's important, sit down, and then we're going to bring in all these guys, and it's a chance for you to show what you can do. But really, everyone knows there's a sort of a pecking order within the team. So you've your first team, and then but if you're in the Champions League, you don't need that two-team structure. You need one squad. And that's, I guess we have to recalibrate our mindset a little bit towards that as and when we get there. I do get it for the Europa League group stages. I understand a game against Bodo Glimt is not the same as if you were playing PSG or Barcelona or, another top tier European club in the group stage of the Champions League. I get that. But at the same time, you have to keep people involved and you have to keep them giving them minutes. And like you say, I think it didn't necessarily shift the momentum completely back the other way in terms of the game. We didn't really have too many chances until the late part of the second half. But you're right to say that I think Mikel Arteta was probably looking at that second half and thinking, well, I've got to do something about this because Bodo Glimt are a tidy side. They're pretty confident on the ball when they have it in the right areas. They made a couple of bursts through midfield. They got to the edge of the box. There was one shot that Matt Turner had to make a good save from. It's not as if we were completely and utterly under the cosh. Nevertheless, I think if you're a manager and you're sitting there and you're watching that and you're looking at that game, you've got to think to yourself, well, I have to do something to maybe just change it a little bit. And even the presence of people like Odegaard, Jesus, Saka on the pitch, it kind of halts the endeavor of the opposition because they don't want to leave themselves as open as they were or as they might be when they push forward.
And you get to play Ødegaard and Fabio Vieira together as well, which is, you know, these little things. I mean, it's a bit like seeing him in a friendly, that, you know, Ødegaard and Vieira. I didn't feel like I learned much. And kind of, to be honest, towards the end, until Reece Nelson came on and was determined to put on a show for those of us that were left, I was pretty close to falling asleep. Not actually, but, you know,
no, I did.
But these are minutes you don't get anywhere else. And like you say, the Champions League is not going to afford you opportunities to see if the Ødegaard Fabio Vieira free eight tandem works. Half an hour against Bodo Glimt, it's not perfect, but it's the best you're going to get, best you're ever going to get in a season. So yeah, I think there is always value in seeing how these players mesh together.
Eddie Nketiah scored second start of the season in the Europa League, second goal. I mean, this is clearly the role that he understands he has at this moment in time, that these games are a chance for him to start. He is featuring in the Premier League. He's coming on. You know, I'm sure he's not necessarily happy, but probably understands, you know, when you've got someone like Gabriel Jesus up front, all you can do, though, is make your mark when you do get the opportunity. And there was a good stat going around. I know these are slightly skewed stats, but I think it's something like 12 goals in his last 15 starts for Arsenal, which is pretty impressive. When you broaden that out to appearances, it's probably doesn't stand up to as much scrutiny. But when you're coming on in the last 5, 10, 15 minutes of a Premier League game, it's not always easy as we've seen in the past. But when he is starting, he is scoring. It's quite funny, isn't it? Because I think there have been really big improvements in his all-round game. There was a great chance early on where he took the ball, ran with it, beat a couple of players, got to the edge of the box, curled a shot, really not very far wide. Mm. Would have been a very spectacular goal. Not the kind of goal that you would associate with Eddie Nketiah if you thought about him in the last 12, 18, 24 months. So it's kind of ironic that the goal he scored was a very Eddie Nketiah goal from inside the box. I do think, though, that the finish wasn't as simple as he made it look.
I completely agree. And I think a lot of these goals are not as simple as they look. It is when the ball keeps breaking to you in the penalty area, it isn't flukes. It happens to Eddie Nketiah more than certainly any Arsenal striker I've seen it, you know, in the the sort of modern era, the 21st century. This is a skill. I don't know how much of this is, well, actually, I suspect a lot of this is not a coach skill, and this is a skill that he has kind of, it's a bit innate, and obviously there will be some coaching within that, and he works hard on it. I know that for a fact. You know, he is obsessed with how he can be a player that positions himself and reacts quickly enough, because I mean, I'm not looking at the goal right now, but I think if you go back to look at it, isn't he slightly behind the Bodo Glimt defender who doesn't react quickly enough? And he gets the leg there. And a really nice, crisp volley. I mean, it would test a goalkeeper if they were in the net. You know, that is, I always think of, and I probably used this on the Askcast before, it puts me in mind of, there's a scene in The Last Dance, the Netflix documentary on the Chicago Bulls, where Dennis Rodman spends ages talking about the spin that's imparted on a ball when he's going up for a rebound, and how he knows, you know, if it's spinning in one way, it's probably going to land here. So this is where I need to put myself. And Nketiah does that. He keeps finding himself in these spots. It's such a valuable trait. I think it's a particularly valuable trait in a second striker. I know that sort of last season there was that miss against Everton, but you know, the stats nerds and people that have been watching the game since, you know, for a very long time, they'll all agree on, actually what's most important is you're getting yourself in a position to miss these chances, because, you know, if you miss, if you're taking the shots, there's more value than not. And he does this so well, so well. I really like that side of his game. And like you say, come on, leaps and bounds in his build-up play. His pressing with Marquinhos, I thought, was excellent early on, really disrupted Bodo Glimt. But like, the special sauce with Nketiah is this just fox in the box, to use a classic Arsenal phrase.
Sure.
And it's so valuable. It's so, so valuable.
No, it is. It's a really, really good finish. I mean, the build-up from Gabriel Martinelli was like he'd been quiet. I mean, Martinelli and Xhaka in particular, I think both of them looked early on like guys who'd played 90 minutes a few days ago, and it took them a little bit of time to warm up. I'm not sure Xhaka really warmed up to the extent that you would like, although he did have two very good efforts saved, one very early in the second half, free kick tipped over, it was a good save as well. But Martinelli, that run through the middle, that is kind of, if you're talking about special sauce, that's kind of what he is bringing to the team this season, that ability to drive through spaces in a slightly unconventional way. It's almost like it's antithetical to what you're supposed to do, because he looks like a guy who's got his head down, but you can't do what he's doing with your head down. You just can't do it. It's just kind of the way he moves and the way he drives through. It was a brilliant burst through midfield, an extremely pleasing crack off the post from Kieran Tierney. I'd say that was one where you could hear it all the way around the stadium.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was. Oh. I love that sound.
Yeah, me too. And for it to finish up with the ball in the back of that from Nketiah, absolutely sensational. Fabio Vieira, we've got to talk about him because he got a great assist for Rob Holding's goal. Credit to Rob. It's a very good header. It looked bread and butter from one angle, but when you look at it from the behind the goal angle, he does direct it very well beyond the goalkeeper, giving him no chance. But a superb delivery from Vieira. And this is a young man who Arsenal paid a fairly substantial amount of money for in the transfer market this summer. We didn't get to see him in preseason, so there wasn't necessarily a great deal of hype around him the way there was with Jesus, the way there was with Zinchenko when we saw them come into the team in preseason, play really, really well. He was sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here? An unknown quantity, even though people had watched the videos and everything else. But he's got, what, two goals and an assist, or two assists and a goal? I can't remember one way or the other. But, you know, in four games, four appearances, you know, he's producing already for Arsenal. You can see that there's more to come from him. But what we saw last night, I think, was very interesting. Five shots, three key passes, a goal and an assist. Looks very comfortable. Doesn't look overawed at all by the occasion, but like, I'm not sure, with all due respect to our Norwegian listeners, you know, a game against Bodo Glimt isn't necessarily the high point of European football, but still, his first start in a European game for Arsenal, I think he's very, very impressive so far, and it's clear there's a lot more to come from him.
I thought, for me, the really interesting point you made there was about those five shots. Mm. Of course, you know, you see flashes of Ødegaard and previous number 10s in Vieira, but I think it's also quite easy to see from the way he plays and his first reaction when the ball comes to him, it's quite easy to see why in what I swear was about 15 minutes, he set the, you know, he was leading the Portuguese league for assists last season. Mm. To an extent, I wonder if it's something that might kind of end up being coached out of him is the wrong way to phrase this, but he might be told to ease back and focus more on retaining possession than trying that killer ball. Mm. But equally, I think it's a really nice contrast to an Ødegaard who, you know, certainly a criticism we all have of him, one of the few, is that sometimes you just wish he would shoot. Mm. Vieira, he gets into those shooting positions. I would suspect quite a few of those five shots were from within the box as well as some outside. He is looking for those direct goal contributions. And that to me is something I really like. I spent a lot of the first 20, 25 minutes just watching him. And he did, the only time he stood still was when that Bodo Glimt defender trod on him. He is always moving, always looking for those angles. I know that's something we're very used to from Arsenal players, but yeah, I saw a lot to like. I saw an awful lot to like. And if you are a number 10 that's making those direct goal scoring contributions, I think he could end up being a player that is what, you know, Arsene Wenger always wanted from an Oxlade-Chamberlain or a Rzitski, or, you know, those guys when he's going, please, 10. He was almost begging quotes at the start of every season. Just please just score me 10 goals.
Yeah.
I don't know if Vieira will get to 10 because, you know, he will probably not be a regular in the Premier League, although I can definitely see it later this season and in years to come. But I'm thinking he's going to rank very highly when we start filtering all those stats by per 90 minutes. He's taking his shots. He's playing his passes, and I really like seeing that.
It was quite interesting. Arteta talking about him afterwards. You know, he said you saw the quality. Every time he's around the box, he's a real threat. Really intelligent and brave. Then he said, in defending, he still needs to do more and understand it more because organization is key when you play against good teams in ball possession. I think that says so much about Mikel Arteta. Like, we've taken this step forward. Arsenal have taken a real step forward in terms of how they play, the perception of the team, what kind of football we play, the way we attack. And it's fantastic. And I'm not downplaying that by any stretch of the imagination, but it's clearly built on defensive awareness in every aspect of the game, in every area of the pitch. And I think you could say maybe the same applies to Albert Samby-Lokonga, who I thought very, very tidy on the ball. But during that period when Bodo Glimt had a bit of success, is not quite the right way, but where they had a good spell in that second period, that area in front of the Arsenal central defenders in central midfield where Samby is essentially playing the Thomas Partey role, that, I think, is where he still has a bit to do as well. It's that defensive awareness, the positioning. It's like the decision-making. Do I go and join? What's happening? And Arteta spoke a bit afterwards where he said we lacked a little bit of connection. I wasn't entirely sure what he meant by that, but when I looked at the stats this morning, Vieira had 100% pass completion rate, but only 16 passes. And for a player playing in his position, it's quite a small number given the way that the game was dominated for the most part by Arsenal. Then you look at where Arsenal had the most touches, the most passes, and it was in the central defenders. It was in holding, it was in Gabriel, and it was trying then to connect between the central defenders, the midfield, and then the attacking role that Vieira was playing in, where I think that's kind of what he was referring to.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I think we have to remember that across those build-up positions, and I'm sure we'll come to talk about, you know, Matt Turner as well, these weren't players that are, you know, one of the key reasons they're not in the strongest 11 is because they aren't quite as strong in build-up. And I know Gabriel is, I think he can have games where he passes really well, but it always helps him, I think, to have the better options around him. With Lokonga, I certainly agree with you that in that pressure period, there were several moments where I was wondering where he was. And I think, you know, it is a challenge and one that he needs to be played through and given minutes to fail. The challenge of this Thomas Partey role that Thomas Partey couldn't fulfill for a long time at Arsenal. And I think I can't think of many other players in the Premier League or in Europe that could do as well as Partey does. Like you say, yeah, I agree with that. There was certainly felt like there wasn't quite the zip in moving the ball upfield. And I think Ramsdale brings so much to that as well. We obviously tend to think of it around the outfield players, but I think the ability to bypass midfield gives you and the knowledge from the opposition that actually if the ball goes all the way back to Ramsdale, you still have to be ready. You can't push numbers forward. It adds so much to the build-up. You know, this is an 11 thing. And whilst we all think of the player that's in that midfield pivot role as the most important to build up, and he probably is, I think when you start picking out one piece by one piece by one piece, that's when it all sort of falters. And when, you know, Fabio Vieira gets 16 passes where Ødegaard might be getting on for 40.
Yeah, well, that's it. And like making that point about Samby, it's not necessarily to be critical. It's about the ability to use games like this as a coaching tool in a way. So when afterwards, I assume there's some individual coaching, we saw it in the All or Nothing, Albert Stuyvenberg, who would just come in, do that better. you know, maybe not, maybe it's a little more in-depth when the cameras aren't there.
Shit.
Yes. you know, it is a way then to teach a player. like when to make the right decisions, when to move out of your zone, when to go and support, but when to sit and when to make sure that you're there in front of the back four. You mentioned Matt Turner. I have to say, I thought he had a good game with his hands. Made a good save. There was one very high ball. I think it could have been a header from a free kick, which looped way up in the air. And it was one of those where you're thinking, ooh, what's the goalkeeper going to do here? Safe hands. Very good. Impressed by that aspect of his game. I wasn't necessarily as comfortable with him on the ball. And I think this is something everybody knows. He even spoke about it himself before he joined, that he's work to do in that regard. I was a little concerned, though, about how uncomfortable he looked at times receiving the ball. I think some of his passing wasn't great. He did look like he didn't want it a couple of times as well. And I just wonder about, look, it's only two games. I'm not making any definitive judgments on the guy or anything like that. He may well develop into somebody who can use the ball well with his feet, but given his age, I think it's reasonable to ask a few questions about that area of things. How did you view that aspect of his game? Should it be a surprise to anybody that that's sort of the weakness that he has? And, you know, when we're thinking about this season as a whole, it just seems a little bit odd to me that when Arsenal went out and got a goalkeeper this summer, they got somebody who isn't, look, I don't mean to say you can get somebody who's exactly like Aaron Ramsdale. Mm-hmm. But Aaron Ramsdale has become so important to Arsenal in the way that he uses the ball. It just seems a bit strange to me that the guy that they went for is, that's his big weakness, if you like.
So I think the first thing we have to bear in mind is that the previous incumbent as the number two goalkeeper was a very expensive number two goalkeeper, a very, you know, high profile one. He wasn't great with his feet on the ball in Bernd Leno. And I think part of this we have to kind of bear in mind, I don't know exactly how much Matt Turner is earning, but I know it's significantly less than Leno. And, you know, that's a judgment call that Arsenal had to make. And of course, Leno as well wants to be a number one, and rightly so. I would also be of the view that, especially having seen Alex Runnerson play, the first thing I want from a backup goalkeeper, a goalkeeper that I might kind of have to throw in at the deep end, is I want to trust that he can make saves. Because, you know, it is one thing we all forget about Aaron Ramsdale as well. He is also pretty good and getting better all the time, I think, bar the odd wobble late last season, at keeping the ball out of the net. And it's one thing, you know, and everyone would agree, when everyone was watching their Matt Turner clips before he arrived, the kid's a great shot stopper, a really, really strong man. There was one excellent save, wasn't there, when it went through both Gabriel and Holding's legs.
Very good, very quick reactions. Yeah, impressive.
I don't want to give too much away. He gets it. He gets that this is where he really has to work hard at playing the ball out with his feet. If you went and asked him, he would tell you that if you think he's bad at playing the ball with his feet now, go and watch him a year or two ago. He is trying to improve. He's working really hard. And I think we all forget that is, and like you said, it is somewhere that, you know, players can develop, players can get better at perceived weaknesses. You know, you don't have to go out and buy a ball playing goalkeeper now because two games in, you're not happy with how Matt Turner does with the ball at his feet. I think Tim Stillman made this point, and I was kind of looking at Wyscat, and I thought, especially in that first game against Zurich, when he just had to hoof it, he actually did that quite nicely. I mean, when I say the word hoof, they were clipped. Arsenal players were winning the balls, and that's kind of all you can ask. But he's just not, you know, I think 3 or 4 years ago, he was playing lower level college soccer, which I will use in this context because, you know, people might think I mean actually college American football. And, you know, I don't think everyone still fully appreciates how quickly this kind of journey has all come together for him. And equally, you know, for my sins, based on my employer, every once in a while I have to watch MLS football. It's not a pleasant experience. It is not, you know, tactically sophisticated. There is a long way to go between that and you know, it is improving. to our American listeners out there, it's getting better. Please don't shout at me. But it is, you know, he is not a league that where he is going to learn how to cope when, you know, good teams are pressing him. Yeah, he's working on it, I guess, is all you can say. And I think come the latter stages of the Europa League, early in the FA Cup campaign, that's when I think we kind of need to say, has he got better? He will probably never be Aaron Ramsdale, but then, you know, there aren't many goalkeepers out there that pass with the swagger, the fearlessness, swashbuckling passes, aren't they always, from Aaron Ramsdale? And you just aren't getting a backup goalkeeper who does that. And if you do, I'm always worried about them, what they're like as a shot stopper. At least I feel like, you know, if the chips are down, if I need someone to make a big save, I feel like you can trust Turner on that.
Mm.
I know everyone wants everything from every player in their squad, and there's no reason why you shouldn't demand that. But he's a safe pair of hands, which used to be the only thing you needed to be as a goalkeeper.
Yeah, well, that's true. But the game has changed, and the way that Arsenal play has changed, and, you know, it is a reasonable conversation to have, I think.
Definitely.
And, you know, look, it's only his second game. He may well, you know, have had a few nerves at home, playing at home for the first time, whatever it might be. He's certainly got a long fucking kick on him when he does launch it. The issue, I think, last time when he did launch it, there was one where I think Odegaard had come deep for a pass and he sort of waved people away and then just belted it straight through to the opposition goalkeeper. And I, you know, whatever else, I don't know that that's what Mikel Arteta necessarily wants. I suppose it's safe for a few seconds, but you never know what way the ball is going to come back. And look, hopefully he can improve. Hopefully he can keep improving. I do wonder as well if, you know, part of the improvement process is just confidence. It's about feeling like I can do this. I played some games now. I can do it, albeit in the Europa League, whatever it might be. Fingers crossed he can make that improvement. Because I do, like I said, I thought he was good with his hands, made a good save, a couple of good takes. So, you know, fingers crossed. Before we sort of just move very quickly away from this, I think we have to talk about the Gabriel Jesus assist, simply because it feels like that one's been in the post for a few weeks. He's tried that more than once. In fact, there was a moment in the Tottenham game where he did something similar in a similar area. I think he toe-poked his shot at Hugo Lloris, who managed somehow to keep it out. I don't know quite how he did it, given some of the other stuff he did in the game, but there you go. Like, unbelievable footwork. And I think a good finish as well from Vieira, where he made sure he put that ball in a place where no defender who was back there could get anywhere near it.
Yeah, it did put me up, because that wasn't the only occasion against Tottenham where Jesus did those sort of those wonderful runs, beat a few men, and sometimes he didn't get a shot away. Now, obviously, you know, as we know, when Tottenham don't get a shot away, that is searing football. It should count as a whole two expected goals. It is a sign of their dominance over the game. But when Arsenal, you know, get their shots away, or even when they beat men and don't get their shots away, doesn't count. It is, yeah, like you said, it was a real treat. I thought, you know, as for a game that had sort of petered out, it's clearly something he's not afraid of. And like every single game, he will look to commit players in the box. In a way, one of the things that's intrigued me is, and I don't even think, because there hasn't even been an occasion where I thought, oh, he should have got a penalty there, or he was fouled, especially against the Bodo Glimt defenders and frankly, some of the Tottenham defenders. He's almost a little too good at dribbling through the area, because they're not even laying a boot on you, Gabriel, and maybe just, you know, leave that right, when you're dribbling through, just leave that right leg trailing and see if you can get clipped, because you know, that is more often than not, I think those are going to lead to, or more often than not, they'll lead to nothing, but more often than leading to an assist, like, you know, that wonderful one for Vieira, they could well get you a penalty. And I think it's something Arsenal have not been the best at under Mikel Arteta. I'm racking my brain for examples, but just forcing opponents in the penalty area.
We don't get them. We don't get given them.
They don't at all. I don't know. I mean, you know.
I mean, the Burnley.
Certainly when they've got them in the derby.
No, I mean, that's it. I mean, you know, we don't tend to get those decisions. You know, you think about the Pepe one against Burnley a few years ago, a couple of seasons ago, where the guy literally looks like, if you want to talk about the last dance, Michael Jordan would have been happy with that kind of ball control. We don't get it. But no, I think that's an interesting point. It really is, you know, that kind of danger that an opponent like that creates in the box, where it just takes a split second, one quick movement of your feet, and you get kicked in the ankle. And, you know, hopefully, and I say this laughing, VAR might give you something if the referee doesn't spot it in real time, but there you go. Look, all in all, good win. 3 points, top of the group. And like you say, the importance of winning the group, you know, I always thought it was important. I didn't quite realize how important that it does save you a fixture against a team that maybe you don't want to be playing against. So Bodo Glimt next week, then PSV, and who knows, Arsenal could have the group wrapped up in a couple of weeks. I just want to move on to the weekend very quickly. We'll talk about this a bit more on the preview podcast on Patreon, but it is a big, big game. Arsenal versus Liverpool at home. A slightly wobbly Liverpool, based on, you know, what we've come to expect from them. Their start to the season has been a little bit uncharacteristic, I think you might say. Arsenal's start to the season, as we all know, has been really good. So there are reasons going into this game to feel positive. It's still going to be very tough because this is a very, very good Liverpool side. They're going to want to haul themselves out of this little mess they're in. A team that redoubles their efforts and all that kind of stuff is always tough to play against. But when we look at this fixture, is this kind of a marker fixture in the calendar? Because, look, Tottenham is a brilliant win, but Tottenham never win at the Emirates. You know, Arsenal always beat Tottenham because, as we know, they get battered everywhere they go. But Liverpool is a different kettle of fish, right? So when you're looking at this Arsenal team, when you're looking at tangible ways of measuring the progress, and I think there are other ways you can do it apart from just results in games. You know, you can look at the stats, you can look at the performances. We all have eyes. We can all see that Arsenal are playing better football this season than they were this time last season, for example. But when you consider the record against Liverpool and how difficult we have found it against them in seasons past, is this the kind of game where Arsenal can really show people things are different? It doesn't necessarily, even if it's not a win, to be competitive against this Liverpool team would feel like a step forward based on some of the results we've seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much in the entire post-Wenger era, I personally have considered Liverpool to be kind of the yardstick against which Arsenal are measured. So, you know, a few years back when it was 3 or 4 nil every time, they were a helpful reminder of how far Arsenal had to go. I think obviously part of this is also comes down to the fact that they built in a way that Arsenal could, in theory, replicate. They have spent quite a lot of money, but they, you know, they've also sold quite well. They've not broken the bank. They don't have petro millions funding them. Then kind of going on to earlier this year, I thought there were signs, weren't there, in the EFL Cup games and even in the league game, that when Arsenal were on form, you know, they could match a Liverpool team that was one of the best in Europe. I'm still skeptical about how, you know, how long-term this early season wobble is. I don't think it's a sign of decline. Now, kind of, I'm always of the view of a team like Liverpool or a player like a, you know, Messi or Virgil van Dijk or whoever, I'd rather be kind of the last person saying that they're still great than the first person who jumps the gun and says they're gone.
So you're not saying they're a finished club or anything like that?
Liverpool are not finished FC. They are very much still alive. I think it, you know, I would be having sort of quite nervous hives looking at some of those bookmakers' odds and seeing Arsenal as the favourites because, you know, this Liverpool team at full strength, and I think it's going to be not too far from full strength. If they can click into gear, I still think their level, the collective level, is a bit higher than Arsenal have reached consistently yet. But, you know, for all those reasons, you know, if Arsenal can play their way, obviously they drew at Anfield earlier this year, but only by playing, you know, pure, excellent, but pure defensive football. If they can go out. Yeah, with 10 men. If Granit Xhaka cannot get sent off, if they can go out and, you know, say we are playing Arsenal football, we're going head to head with Liverpool, and if they can match them, like you say, I don't think they need to win. Even if it's just a defeat would be a shame, I think, obviously, and might scotch that early season top of the table momentum whilst Erling Haaland's playing against Southampton.
He's going to be 9-0 to Haaland.
Well, that's exactly what I said to a Southampton fan last night. It's the logical endpoint of Ralf Hasenhüttl's reign, which seems like it's going to finish quite soon, is he loses 9-0 again and it's all Haaland. Every goal. I think for Arsenal, this is a, like you say, a better opportunity than Tottenham to show where they are. We've seen them play well against every other one of the big six and quite often get rewards, maybe not against City of late. Mm. But I've not seen them go toe-to-toe with Liverpool and show that they are a match for them. And yeah, I think especially when you look at back to kind of how their aura clearly perturbed Arteta before he went to Anfield last season, I think kind of inflicting that aura, giving Liverpool a taste for this fantastic Emirates Stadium atmosphere, these could all be hugely valuable, whatever the result. And if the result was a really, you know, positive one, like, then we get to have those fun conversations about whether Arsenal are the second best team in England. I'm never, ever having the one about best team in England.
Not yet.
But certainly, I think I hope Arsenal think of this as a real opportunity, and probably the only game this side of Christmas where they can sort of announce themselves as Liverpool's successors.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. I've been reliably informed that Jurgen Klopp has got the speakers out and he's playing tequila over and over again on the training ground just to get his players used to what's going
to
happen.
I mean, to be fair, you could see that players would get really, really annoyed. They're going to be singing this for 90 minutes. It's going to drive you mad.
Mohamed Salah just waking up in the middle of the night going, Saliba, the fuck? God damn it. Anyway, we'll see what happens on Sunday. Like I said, we'll talk more about this on the Patreon podcast. For now, though, James Bench, thank you so much.
Thank you, Andrew.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Thank you very much indeed to James Benge. You can find him on Twitter. He is at James Benge, at James Benge. Right, I did mention I have a competition for you. We've got an Arsenal 92 polo shirt to give away from our friends at Club Golf. Very easy to enter. All you need to do is go to the Club Golf website, which is clubgolf.uk. clubgolf.uk, and you'll see a picture on the front and there'll be the words Club Golf. I want you to tell me the little strap line or the motto underneath the words Club Golf. Four words. Send me those words in an email, please, to competition@arsblog.com. That is competition@arsblog.com, and we will pick a winner at random for next week's show, and you will get yourself an Arsenal 92 polo shirt. For now, gonna leave it there. There is a big game, obviously, at the weekend. We will preview that in some detail over on Patreon. Myself and Phil Costa will have that for you tomorrow, Saturday. If you want to sign up, you can do that. patreon.com/arsblog. James and I will be here on Monday. day with an Arsecast Extra. Hopefully it's a goodly morning. Hopefully we're talking about a good result against Liverpool. Let's keep fingers crossed for that. In the meantime, have yourselves a great weekend. Thank you very much as always for listening, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Yes, of course I've seen it said that Tottenham get battered everywhere they go, but I must take umbrage at this, because that's simply one way of looking at the events. Let's take last weekend, when Arsenal, it's fair to say, won the derby. But if we completely recontextualize what happened, I think you'll see that the prevailing narrative, such as it is quite false. So let's imagine that rather than a game of football, this was a boxing match. Two sluggers ready to go at each other with gay abandon, and Arsenal land the first punch. It's a bit of a haymaker, fair enough. And later, of course, there's an uppercut, which leaves Tottenham against the ropes. And that's followed by a powerful left hook, if you like, from Granit Xhaka. But Tottenham came close to landing a punch or two themselves. Yes, Arsenal effectively punched themselves in the balls by giving away a penalty. But imagine for just one second that a flurry of punches from the Tottenham side had connected with the Arsenal boxer. I mean, yes, they missed. But if they hadn't, then what would we be talking about today? Think about that next time you're watching.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A title fight, and one chap sparks the other chap right the fuck out. It could have been very different. Very different.